All right, welcome to another episode of the Innovativeness Imperative. This is a podcast that will explore innovativeness, which is the quality that results from the combined enhancement of customer experience and employee experience to consistently generate new ideas, products, and services in a business, and is required in a business because if you're not innovating, you're dying. I'm Dr. Malcolm Tyson, and my goal is to drive individual innovativeness through the shared stories of innovators along the continuum of innovation from discontinuous to continuous. So we try to ponder the following question. If necessity is the mother of innovation, who's the daddy? Well, an innovation strategy is the father of innovation, but as a guest of the show, you and I will explore innovativeness, which is like the characteristic that gets passed from parent to child, like eye color or dimples. This podcast sets out to provide a platform for leaders to share and learn how they are using innovative strategies and tools to grow businesses, as well as ignite cultures for innovation with the hopes of sparking innovativeness, inspiring people on their innovativeness journeys, and sharpening leadership skills. I'm honored to be joined by Enya Mae Jones today, a dynamic and accomplished association professional currently thriving as an independent consultant. Edith May is a transformative and visionary executive with a robust background in professional development, adult education, diversity, equity, inclusion, and strategic leadership. She has a master's in science in education, master's of science in education focused on higher education administration, a master of arts in communication studies, and a Bachelor of Science in Cellular Biology. Enya Mae integrates her diverse educational foundation with certifications as a Certified Association Executive, Certified Diversity Executive, and a Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion in the Workplace Expert. Her action-oriented approach sets her apart as a leader in her field. Enya is an active member of the American Society of Association Executives and the Society for Diversity, serving as on the ASAE Diversity and Inclusion Advisory Council, and having previously contributed to the Professional Development Council, she is a recognized leader in the association and nonprofit community. In addition, she has an influence that extends beyond specific organizations to industry-wide impact. As a key contributor to the ASAE thought leaders community, she was pivotal in developing the DEIA and conscious inclusion micro-credential program, mainly focused on building sustainable DEIA strategies internationally. She collaborated with the European Society of Association Executives in June 2022, presenting a global approach to DEI and conscious inclusion for associations, showcasing her thought leadership on a global stage. So please join me in welcoming Edith Mae Jones.
It's my pleasure to be here, Marcus.
All right, so let's get into it. Extensive background in terms of introduction, but what is something that you'd like to share that's not in your introduction?
Something that most people wouldn't attribute to leadership is creativity.
Okay.
Your ability to see a whole picture and to actually visualize that picture. I think I get that from the fact that I'm an accomplished designer and a seamstress. So that being able to see across a color spectrum and build something from scratch, I believe really contributes to my ability to strategically think about leadership
and
put pieces together.
Yeah. No, that's good. As a leader, you have to be able to not only see what's right in front of you, but project out, right? And see, be a visionary about what you're trying to get accomplished. So that brings me to another question. In your own words, describe like what you do in your role as an association executive, and then like how you help within, how you help leaders become better leaders.
In my role as an association executive, I primarily look towards membership engagement. So on the other hand, you can think about it as employee engagement. How do we get our employees or our members to become more engaged and understand the return on their investment? Yeah. So with that, we can look at not just the task, but look at the whole person. Mm-hmm. And I know DEI has been getting a lot of backlash, but it's important for people to understand that this is not about race. This is about consciously including within your organization a wide range of thought management. Mm. People cannot think the same.
Yeah.
For you to be innovative and creative, we have to have people or a variety of thought. Yeah. So when you think about conscious inclusion, think about the ability to get people to become more self-aware, which mm-hmm. make them better leaders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's excellent. And it's funny that you mentioned the DEI being under attack. As we talked about previously, there's a number of large companies, I would say Fortune 50 or Fortune 500 companies that are cutting their DEI programs. And it's somewhat ironic because the value of a DEI program is, I think it's established, right? Like McKinsey has done studies.
Yes.
Boston Consulting has done studies on the value of having, as you said, the diversity of thought, diversity of backgrounds and experiences, how that helps to improve innovation, improve profitability, improve productivity, all of these things. But when things get, and I guess when things get tough, I don't know how things are getting tough for these large companies, but I'm just saying, when things get tough, those are the first programs to get cut. And so you said something to me before, and I want you just kind of to repeat that. It's like, you can cut the program, but.
Oh, yeah. You can cut the programs, but the people are still there.
Yeah.
So what do you do with the people who are still there?
Yeah.
You, for example, think about building a website. Mm-hmm. If that website is not accessible to the hearing impaired, how is your business going to progress?
Yeah, yeah.
So to think, you know, we have gotten to the point where we pull everything down to these minute catch phrases that incite turmoil in people. So we come down to making DEI about race.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We come down to making affordable healthcare about Obamacare. You know, we condense these things to move our narrative.
Yeah.
To push our narrative, no matter how harmful those narratives can be.
Yeah.
So when you think about DEI and you remove the concept about race and understand that, excuse me, even now, you have a total different culture of people who live in the Northeast as opposed to people who live in the Southeast. They have their own traditions. They have their own moral standards and let's understand morality and morals are two different things.
Yeah.
Morality is about religion and morals is more of what makes a culture.
Values, yeah.
And the values of a culture. So right. When you have those differences and you bring people together, understand that as people interact, we filter, what we hear and what we see based on those cultural values
Absolutely.
That we have learned.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
When you're building a leader, you have to understand that to become emotionally intelligent, you need to understand your culture.
Mm-hmm.
Culture, again, is not race and it's not mm-hmm. about ethnicity.
Yeah.
It's about those things that make you who you are.
Yes.
Yes. A lot of the examples we give may go on geographic. For instance, we say Americans are quick to say hello, but have no patience to hear what comes on that. After that, how are you?
Yeah.
Other cultures actually stop
mm-hmm.
to hear what comes after that. How are you?
Yeah.
Now, what is, when you, an American company that's doing global business, and we, I mean, there's no way we can stop the globalization mm-hmm. of what's happening now. When you're doing global business and you go to Europe, you go to Africa, you, how are you? And you keep running, most people look at the smile and realize that it doesn't reach your eyes.
Yeah.
Right there, you are not building trust. And mm-hmm. those are where some of the problems come in when you're doing global business, and then it fails because people do not stop to think about the fact that those things that define my culture does not transcend.
Yeah.
The jokes also do not transcend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have to be careful when you're interacting with people because you are not self-aware. You are not aware of who you are as a person.
Yeah.
And that is really what DEI is. And that's what conscious inclusion is all about. So to become more emotionally intelligent, you have to first begin with yourself,
mm-hmm.
understand yourself. It moves even into your interaction in your family. When you're dealing with your millennial children or your new age children,
mm-hmm.
you have to understand that what they say filters through your 1960 brain, your 1955 brain, or even your 1980 brain, depending on how early you started having children.
Absolutely.
So that's very important, becoming self-aware.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's funny that you mentioned that because I was just talking to my wife about how, so I have a son that's a senior in high school, and my upbringing was different, is totally different from his, right? And rightfully so, right? But it's hard for me to kind of understand the things that he's going through, right? Mm-hmm. Because I came up differently. And so I have to constantly remind myself that his experience and my experience at that same age were different,
yes.
right? And so I have to be more creative. I have to ask more questions and stuff like that. And so that makes me think, in the introduction of the podcast, I talked about employee experience, right? That's a driver of innovativeness. And a lot of your work, whether it's conscious inclusion, DEI, leadership development, it's all about driving employee experience and really driving employee engagement. So I want you to give me, if you can, in your words, what does that mean? What is employee, let's go with employee experience. What does that mean to you? What does it mean?
Whether you're thinking about employee experience or membership experience, you're wanting to put those individuals in the position where you become the go-to place. So as an employer, you want to have your employee value
mm-hmm.
working for you.
Yeah, it's good.
And make a commitment, whether that commitment is 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, that they will bring their all and the best.
Yeah.
Invest in the work. But people cannot do that if they cannot see a return on their investment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
See, so your employee needs to understand that if I'm gonna, and I think COVID also has taught us that we can no longer separate professional from personal life. They cross too often.
That's
good. So yeah. That employee experience must take into account that person's personal life, which then meaning we have to be more flexible. Mm-hmm. We have to be more agile in how we work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that the employee again can realize that I'm investing half my life into this company.
Yeah.
But I'm getting something back. Yeah. Whether it's education, whether it's getting experience or just collaboration and from your colleagues, you're getting something back. And that something is enriching that employee's life.
Yeah. No, that's really good. And it makes me think about, as you said, this sort of bringing together for so many years. And even in my experience, my professional life was separate. When I left the job, I left the job there and I came home, right, and started my personal life. But you're absolutely right. This all has become smashed together. And, you know, that's going to be the future of work going forward, right? Like that is the way work is going to happen. And so I hear a lot of executives, a lot of leaders talking about the challenge that they're having to deal with hybrid work situations, right? Like it's hard. But I want to ask you, what you said was so valuable. Like the employee needs to understand or feel like you value the employer values them, but also the employee values their job. Like they're getting something out of this, right? Whatever it may be. So if I'm a leader, right, and you kind of touched on some of these things, how can I create that environment? How can I create a situation where employees feel valued? What are some of the things that I could do?
As an employer, you can create an authentic, safe place where employees, we're not saying that people must come in and tell everybody their whole life story and bring all the problems into the workplace. But what we are saying that when a woman has a newborn and she's going through postpartum depression, she needs to understand that her employer understand what happens to her.
Yeah.
And not that you're allowing someone to have lax on their job, but you're giving them grace.
Yeah.
Because probably in giving them grace will save that person's life. Mm-hmm. Because we hear in the last few years, the amount of tragedies that have happened around those kinds of postpartum depression and mental health.
Yeah.
So if you're able, if that employee feels that sense of trust where employers understand and give grace, mm-hmm. they're better able to work through their mental health issues, for example, and come back as a full employee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it may require people picking up the slack here and there, but I mean, come on. We know people who go to work and act like they're the busiest people and not produce one scrap of productive information at the end of the day.
Just
flipping through paper, doing busy work.
Yeah.
And not being productive. So when I hear people talk even about hybrid work, oh, we can't keep tabs on on the employee, but what about that employee who takes a 15-minute smoke break every hour and spend 15 minutes outside smoking?
Yeah.
And not being productive. You know, I know people who work hybrid and may have to do something during the day, and you know, go to the doctor or whatever it is, go to the child school and work into the night.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they feel invested in the company and they know that they're being dependent on to produce.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
also know that that employer is there for them.
Yeah, that's so good. And I think the key point here is making sure, you said a great word, grace, right? Grace is one thing. But then I immediately started thinking about those employees, as you mentioned, who abuse that grace, right? But I don't think you create an environment to stop people from abusing the grace. I think you create an environment that has grace, and then you'll be able to identify the people who abuse the grace, right?
Yeah. Yes. Right.
And so, and then another thing that you mentioned that is super important to me is that the employee brings their entire self to work, their full self, not partially. Because I struggle with imposter syndrome. I told you I started out in KPMG and all that sort of stuff. And I had a lot of problems with that because I just didn't see anybody around me, right? I didn't see anybody that looked like me. And so I was always just figuring, thinking that they're going to come in this cubicle one day and say, we made a mistake and let you go. And so, bringing my full self to work, bringing that full self and knowing that if I'm having a rough day, if I'm going through a period that is tough, the company supports me, right? That's super important. And so you also, if my question before is like how do you define that employee experience? But you touched on something. I want you to give me your insights about that. Like, how do you protect that? Like I would just describe, if you create a company that has grace, you're going to have people who abuse it. So how do you kind of protect that culture? If you created a culture of grace, a culture of diversity, how do you protect that and not let it be abused and not let it, you know, fall by the wayside?
Make everybody accountable for. And accountability does not mean that you wait until the end of the year and you sit across the table and tell somebody all that it hasn't done and that. But accountability means that you, the employee, and the employer are joint in what it is that we are looking for as product. Or efficiency or effectiveness. So we both understand. So the employee becomes an active participant in its performance evaluation.
Yeah.
And performance evaluation, we don't wait until the end of the year. We are talking about constantly having your pulse and managers doing what they should be doing. Making sure that people are following that performance evaluation. So you don't wait until the end of the year that you put the person on a performance plan that is unattainable because you're looking for a way to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of these big companies are doing that. And what results? The result is you have an employee who is so stressed out because they can't quite understand this employment. Oh, I'm sorry. This employment plan, they can't quite understand this employment plan, performance plan, but too afraid to go ask. What am I doing right? Am I doing it right? Because nobody's coming back to them to give them feedback.
We
are so busy. It's just like, you know, when you're looking for a job and nobody ever even send you a note to say thank you. It's like, we are so busy. Oh, really? Seriously? What happened 20 years ago? You were not busy? Because 20 years ago, you treated your employee maybe a little better.
Yeah.
You treated your applicants a little better. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, we're so busy. Really?
Yeah.
You know, so when employees feel vested in what it is that's happening within the company to them, they're better able to navigate how they can add to the productivity of a company.
Yeah, no, that's so good. The partnership that you talked about between an employer and an employee, I think is so important. And most people, I would say most people don't think about it. They think about me versus them, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to a partnership. It's a partnership. And I really like the idea of being an active participant in your goals, mm-hmm. and the expectations around you. Like we were talking, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about health equity and how things have changed now. Like, you can actually ask your doctor questions, right? Before, we didn't think about that. We was like, oh, this is the expert. He's giving me advice and telling me about my body, and I'm just going to take it, right? But not today. Today, you need to be asking. You need to ask questions. And the same with an employer, right? If you see a disconnect, or if you feel like you're not, as you said, if you're on a performance plan and you're not quite sure where you're at on that performance plan, ask. Mm-hmm. Ask, right? And it's so interesting because, you know, in my world, if that employee, let's just say they're on a performance plan, they're not innovating. They're not creating new ideas. They're not bringing any of their discretionary time. They're just trying to check the box.
Yeah.
Right? They're just trying to do what they got to do to make sure this performance plan doesn't get any worse, right? And so mm-hmm. you're about feeling invested as an employee in a corporation is so vital, because that's the basement floor of any innovation. Now you gotta feel like the company supports me, they care about me, they care about my career. Like, that's the basic level before you can start innovating. So glad that you brought that up and expounded on it. Now, I want to flip it a little bit. So what are the challenges you're seeing? We talked about hybrid being a potential challenge in fostering employee engagement or membership engagement. What are some of the other challenges that you're seeing to create an environment where this environment of grace that we talked about?
Some of the other challenges I'm seeing are managers who are not prepared to manage a diverse workforce.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example that happened to me. I had a change in direct supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate thing was, this supervisor had been at the company, the association before, worked there in the position I had and left. And so a few years later, I came along, and for the time that I was there, the department had grown under my leadership exponentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, way more, and had become half of the association's revenue, which is really unheard of for non-dues operating department to garnish such a high revenue.
Yeah.
So he comes back and things are not being done the way he was doing it. So then it becomes a talk of war on wanting to go back to the same old golf tournament and this, when nobody really was interested in those things anymore. Nobody had the time to do those things anymore. But in addition to that, what we talk about, there was no separation between, let's just say, the personal overflowed too much into the professional. Where you know you're in trouble when your boss says to you, my wife said, and the wife doesn't even work for the organization.
Right.
So it's those misogynistic behavior where, especially for Black women, where as a Black woman, everything that makes me a Black woman makes me extremely productive. My drive, my passion, my strength makes me extremely productive. And is used and it's fine when it's to the employer's benefit.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, you've been told, oh, you're too strong. People feel you're not approachable. You know, we Black women hear the same thing over and over. But the minute there's a vendor that's not paying, and then you push the Black woman and say, you go in front, sis, you know, you go get that money, knowing that she's going to be forceful.
Yeah, yeah.
That misogynistic behavior is really detrimental to the workforce.
Yeah.
And so managers are not prepared. They are not managing a diverse workforce. You said it's constantly becoming where if it's either you or me, you know, is the pie, I'm assuming it's not big enough where, you know, we all can somehow slice a piece of the pie.
Yeah.
You know, so that is, again, goes back to the inability to be self-aware and the inability to understand the nuances of cultural competency. Not being culturally competent to handle a diverse workforce. You have a lot of millennials coming into work, and Z generation, X, Y, all those generations coming in, and managers are not prepared to manage those people. Because unlike, I guess, our generations, those people also understand that at will means not just you, the employer, I work at your will. Me as the employee, I work for you at my will.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, they're looking for that fit, that right fit. And if that right fit does not work for them, they're willing to leave.
Whereas
our generation, we were suffer through it until we find another job.
Right.
And then they're like, bye, see ya. It was good knowing you.
Right.
And they're out of there.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's such a good point because with, you know, as you mentioned, like we're working longer. Some of the boomers are working longer. We're working longer. And so you have a new crop of younger millennials coming in, and they want what they want, right? They want what they want, and no knock on them, but it's really incumbent on the managers to manage them properly, right? If they're coming in and not liking what they see and they leave, right? Some employers just like, you know what, so be it, we'll get somebody else. But the reality is there's something wrong there, right? It should be a situation where they could come in, and if you've created an environment of grace, as you talked about, whatever that's disturbing them or not appealing to them, through a partnership, you should be able to fix it, Mm-hmm. Right. So that they can stay. And so it also brings up another question. So, because I've seen that as well. I've seen the disconnect between managers and a diverse workforce. And it's tough. It's tough, right? Because as you said, the cultural competency, if that cultural competency isn't there, and then not even the cultural competency, it's the awareness that you don't have that cultural competency, right? It's like, yeah. Man, I don't know about this person, or I don't know about the things that they're talking about, she's talking about. And then saying, all right, being vulnerable enough to say, you know what? I don't know about it. How do I learn more about that? Ask, mm-hmm. right? Or asking. And I've seen in MA where managers, they're afraid to ask.
Yes.
They're afraid to ask because they don't know how it's going to land on the person. They don't know how to say it. And so because they don't know how to say it, they don't say anything. Mm-hmm. And they just let the situation get worse and worse and worse and worse. So I want to ask you, how do managers get prepared, right? Like, how do they get prepared? And then if they have that self-awareness that they are deficit in cultural competency, how do they go about getting it? How do they go about asking for help?
You know, the first thing they need to do is to find a way to develop their emotional intelligence. Okay. How do I pick up? What am I picking up on?
Yeah.
Is it me, or is it me just not understanding what it is that's happening?
Yeah.
So if I don't understand what's happening between me and that employee, it's simple. You do it in all honesty, because you know what I've learned? When people can see genuine honesty on you, they're more receptive to it. They don't think that you have ulterior motives, you're trying to trap them, you're trying to do, you know, where you being honest and you say, you know, I honestly think we not communicating right. And I'm trying to understand where that is coming from. Because I understand that as we communicate, we are both filtering this communication through our perception, how we see the world. So I would like to take you for coffee. Let's go outside of here. Well, we just can relax, talk, you know, talk about people walking in the coffee shop. You know, give your perspective. Just mm-hmm. talk about nothing. And then see how far that goes.
Yeah.
Then the next thing you try to do is to make a conscious effort when you're communicating with that person that you're paraphrasing what they're saying back to them mm-hmm. so that you are clear and they are clear on what it is that you are asking or they're asking. Mm-hmm. That helps. But what also helps is not to assume that person carries the mantra or the push of our entire culture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That we are all individuals as we are. Mm-hmm. So any stereotype or conceptions you have, do your best to put it on the back burner as you're dealing with that individual.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and also yourself, remind yourself. You know, I tell people, I have to constantly remind myself that I operate in two cultures. One is my birth culture. But mm-hmm. the other culture is the culture in which I matured, mm-hmm. became a professional, went to undergrad, graduate school, and interact daily as a professional. Mm-hmm. So they may conflict mm-hmm. because my first reaction may be based on my birth culture, reaction to certain things. You know, in healthcare, the new thing that the federal government has done is that when you're dealing with someone who has experienced trauma, they are requesting that those health professionals get trained in cultural competency, because trauma is not out of a vacuum. Trauma may be because that person may have been in the midst of a civil war, whether Europe, Africa, whatever it is, that person may be, have been a refugee. All of those things affect trauma. It also affects the way in which they react to trauma. We have to stop burying our heads in the sand that this great nation in which we live is all there is. The people coming from all over, even people who are citizens of this country, go to other countries and they get caught up in these global instabilities. So that trauma affects them too. So it's not just the immigrant or who's traumatized. Let's not even say that they have to leave the country. Right in their backyard, they may have been involved in a home invasion or something that traumatized them. And you walking light-footed behind them may cause them to react to you. So we have to be very aware of the fact that life is not a silo. We are living in a global environment. You don't know who you're going to meet tomorrow. When you're talking to people, to not expect that they're going to sound like you. But then, you know, because they may be from the South. So they may have a different accent. So listen. Always be prepared to listen to people and to not expect the same.
No, that's excellent. That is excellent. And the big takeaway for me is that we shouldn't, and I'm guilty of this, just making generalizations on that person represents the entire culture, right? Like that makes no sense, right? But we do it all the time, right? We do it all the time. So no, that's really good. And I'm definitely going to be more conscious of those generalizations that I may make as I'm interfacing or interacting with people. So that's really good, Enime. And I'm keeping my eye on the clock here, but I did have one more question. So what are you seeing? You talked about the things that they're doing in healthcare to equip doctors and healthcare providers with cultural competency. What are you also seeing in your space that will help leaders create these cultures of grace and drive more employee experience or membership experience? What are you seeing? What are the trends you're seeing?
I'm seeing more professional associations take up the space that is now being pushed aside by this whole barrage of beating back DEI. And more professional associations and societies are stepping up to the plate and saying to their members, this is why this is important. And because this is so important, we will provide whatever education or the tools we need for you to navigate these waters, you know, because as a professional society, you have the ability to pay your membership or not. So they can make their own rules. If you don't like the rules, don't pay your membership.
Right.
You can cut your membership. So we see we are seeing more of that. We're also seeing more push in that area from the American Society of Association executives and saying the saying that this is important.
Yeah.
This is important that we arm our members with what it is that they need to build a better association or build a better membership society, but also help the constituents and the members better navigate these waters.
Yeah.
So that's what we're seeing more.
Okay. Yeah. It is going to get turbulent, more and more turbulent. And particularly if the administration changes and some of these political folks who have been pushing towards the end of DEI programs, pushing toward the silencing and eradication of Black history, like all the stuff that's happening in Florida, like they want that to be global. And that will be just the worst. That will be the worst. But so I'm glad to hear that associations and association executives have sort of picked up that mantle of pushing against that, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times these ties just happen, right? These ties just happen. They start small, and then they just bum rush and roll over everybody. But I agree. I'm seeing it in other places too. There is a resistance against that. So that's excellent to hear. That's excellent to hear. This has been awesome. So do you have any Twitter account or social media account that you want to share that I can put out there to viewers and listeners, or website or anything that you want to share at this moment?
Not at this moment. Currently, I'm still tied to an organization. As to not have it conflict, ask people to email me.
Okay.
And then just to make sure it's not conflicting with what I'm doing with She Strategies.
Okay.
And I'm not pushing any other of my colleagues' clients and, and that. So yes, just email me and we can talk from there on what people's needs are.
Okay. You want to say your email address?
My email address is E as in enter, N as in Nancy, I, D as in David, M as in Mary, A as in Apple, I at gmail.com. And that's my first name.
Okay. Enid May. Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Enid May. This has been wonderful. Great talking to you. And I'm going to definitely keep in touch because I got some other things that I want to get you involved in. Really appreciate you taking the time.
No problem, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you. See ya.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Bye.